when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yo guys, welcome to The Last Lap. Don't forget to drop a lovely, juicy 5-star rating if you're watching an Apple Podcast or Spotify. Hope you enjoy, and let's get into it. Welcome one and all, ladies and gentlemen. How are we doing? And it's time for The Last Lap podcast once again. I hope you're all doing well. It's myself, and I'm joined by Tomo. How are you doing, brother?
Good. Tired. Did live show last night with today's guest as well, was good fun.
That means we've got green links, green line chemistry between you both.
That's there. It. Mm-hmm. Exactly. There you go. Yeah. And last podcast before the season actually starts.
Because
a full 3-month break, no December, because typically the season has run into December and you get Abu Dhabi kind of second week of December. But since they moved it with the World Cup, I don't think we'll get December F1 again. I think they're probably going to try and keep it as is, March till to November.
Yeah.
3 months off, but we're soon back. So thank you to everyone for listening and watching. We hope we've kept your off-season F1 fix going.
Your appetite high for Formula One content.
But today's guest, Mr. Aldas, the voice of F1 YouTube.
Crikey, what an intro. Love that.
Yeah.
What everyone's appetites have been whetted, but I can't wait for the season, mate. I've had enough of winter testing, honestly. I've had enough of the winter.
It's been 3 days.
The moment the season ended, I was like, for that first week, I was like, finding some time off. And after about a week, I was like, I want Formula 1 back again. Like, because there was nothing too much to talk about over December period, apart from MBS, and his nonsense with Andre, going mad on his Twitter. Do you think he when he tweets, do you think he realizes that's his main? I want to see his burner.
That guy's mental. He's definitely got three burner accounts. A million percent.
Well,
causing havoc on.
When admins have access to multiple accounts and you just accidentally forget to switch over.
Yeah, nightmare.
People have definitely been caught out by that before.
But yeah, enough of the winter, enough of the MBS nonsense. The season is almost here. I can't wait. And hopefully this year we do actually get a championship fight, because I think we all kind of want to see it. Last year it was kind of a championship fight before Ferrari bowled it about a third of the way into the season. So
yeah,
maybe they'll go halfway into the season before bowling it in 2023 and we can get a little bit closer.
Yeah,
so
we got to Paul Ricard, didn't we, last year? And it was that's a wrap now.
As soon as Charles binned it. Well, again, we started last lap. Our first race was Belgium last year. And Max walked that race, and
that felt like the first race where it was like, oh no, lads, it is actually done.
Brand new F1 live show. Oh, and the season's over. Now this year.
To first.
Our first episode was a finale, though. You've got to think about it that way.
Pretty much. Yeah. We peaked too soon. But this year, there's a lot to... Anything can happen. There's always excitement going into testing. There's always unknown, because everyone starts on the same number of points. What do we think? I think that, first of all, kind of the main stories to take away from testing, and I think we've got to start with certain team and Papaya, don't we? We've got to start with the negative.
Do we know anyone on this show that might know someone driving for that team who are having howler?
Do we?
How does it mean? It's you.
Oh yeah, Lewis. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, you, bro. Yeah, no. Yes, depression, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think it's. I don't know, because obviously Bahrain was terrible last season.
True.
If you're a McLaren fan.
Brake issues.
Absolutely shambolic. Yeah. I think 18th and 19th, because there was one retirement.
They had a shocker in the race as well.
Absolute stinker.
Probably only ahead of Latifi, which is never great.
Yeah, which is never a good sign, if we're going to be honest. It's been, I don't think there's been a single team that's had an absolute howler, as in they might genuinely not finish the first race of the season sort of levels, or like they're 3 seconds off the pace or whatever. Mm-hmm. That was the most disappointing from a general pace perspective and also reliability perspective. I would probably say it's McLaren. I mean, least laps of anyone, right?
Yes. And that's the thing. Like the only team that I can think, I feel like every team, someone's had something somewhat positive to say about them. And the general consensus has been positive. Apart from AlphaTauri, but then AlphaTauri did do the most laps of anyone overall. So that's a positive.
Yeah.
McLaren seems like the only team. And maybe it's because of the expectations we have of McLaren. But they were very downbeat at the launch. I mean, we were, you know, like
we mentioned at the time, it was very sort of like, well, it's not terrible. And we were like, well, you probably shouldn't even be saying terrible at all, really.
That's the thing. When they interviewed Stella, like they had to re-record that part.
Stella.
Really? Yeah, like they had to record that because they recorded it and then there was some issue and they had to re-record the first section when Zak Brown and Stella come up in front of the car.
Right.
So he was so good he said it twice. Like, and it's...
Did he change anything for the second take? Like maybe he sounded a little more upbeat?
No, to be honest.
Even the cameras were unreliable.
Yeah, exactly. That's what, not looking good, McLaren. Big facility, but that's what I mean. That's what immediately came to mind, that one. I've been sending that to
you. I think it's just, it's a bit odd because McLaren, I think, is a team that all of us are fans of. You know, I'm a big fan of the papaya. I like this kind of new era, especially after their struggle years, you know, with Honda and like Alonso and the way they came. I think a lot of fans, they've got a lot of brand new fans, you know, obviously courtesy of Lando as well. But I think it's just disappointing not to see them kind of make that jump because, again, after 2021, when you look at where Ferrari and McLaren were, they were kind of on a similar level, you know, fighting for that best of the rest. And why was it not McLaren to take that big step up, you know, to potentially fight for race wins and where they are now after disappointment in 2022? And again, I'm totally with you guys. Like, I wasn't there, but from everything that I've heard, you know, they were so downbeat, even right from the launch. Like, you know, we're not really happy. We're already looking at like the upgrades that we're going to bring. So it's not what you want to hear as a McLaren fan. So yeah, it's hopefully, again, looking at last season, like you said, they had a horrible Bahrain 2022 with like their brake issues, but they did get better as the season progressed. And ultimately, if they had a driver, not say as good as Lando, but performing better than Ricciardo, they could have finished fourth. And then we're having a different conversation, you know, last year, we're saying they finished best of the rest. So they're kind of still on that, you know, kind of upward trajectory. So and it's not all over, but you don't want to hear a team going, we're already not happy with our car, looking for like our first upgrade. So yeah, we're going to see them, I suppose, at the beginning of the season.
Testing isn't everything, but like if you wanted McLaren to make the step, they probably haven't. That's the reality. Like,
No.
They definitely haven't.
Because when you say the step, well, they were already fighting at the top of the midfield and have been, obviously 2020, they were P3, but that was in large part because Ferrari had fallen off a cliff.
Yeah.
And so they stayed top of the midfield. You know, they were towards Alpine slightly outdeveloped them last year. And again, obviously Ricciardo, you know, was somewhat holding that team's performance back. But the thing is now, because of the cost cap, because it's the second year of this new set of regulations and everyone understands these cars a lot more, like barely anyone, like there was a few breakdowns like Mercedes, Aston Martin.
Yeah,
there's a few cars, but like last year,
yeah.
Like nothing, like in terms of the amount of mileage, I think there was about, I can't remember the number, but there was a significant number. I think it was 5,000 miles in total more were done. That's probably not true, but there was a significant amount
factually correct.
Miles done in total compared to last year's testing as well.
And it was a really weird issue as well, because I get reliability issues. Like I think George had a hydraulics issue. I think Aston Martin had some kind of electrical
Alfa
issue.
Gearbox.
Yeah, like, that's just, you know, those components on a race car, they can go wrong. But McLaren's was like the winglets on top of the wheels. Now that's the sort of thing that I just don't get. Like that's the sort of thing that I'd expect last year, you know, with like the brand new regs, but they should have had that sorted by now. Like
point.
I get they're pushing those components, but that's such a weird thing, and the amount of time it took away from them was crazy. And obviously Oscar also, I think, did the least amount of miles out of any driver, and for a rookie driver, yes, he's got all the hype and he's got all this expectation and all of the accolades that you want from his junior career, but for a rookie to come in with the least amount of miles into your debut season, that is not what you want.
And he was best preparation,
and he was also the only one to spin as well, and I know that's not like it wasn't terrible, but like it shows that he's not quite comfortable with the car. So yeah, not great, not perfect preparation for him.
And I think, you know, you look at where McLaren were, you look at how competitive the rest of the field is looking like it might be. I mean, in a lot of people's, and we'll maybe in a bit we'll do like our full, you know, best to worst ranking of the teams, but a lot of people have put them towards the back because you think Haas, you know, Williams, Alfa Romeo, these teams, it's not just about, yeah, everyone's going to improve, but it's how you improve relative to everyone else. And yeah, it's like last season, the issues that McLaren had at the start of the year, testing, they were clearly not like, they clearly had a good car. There were just issues from testing in terms of understanding the car. And then that made Bahrain a really poor result. But then what Imola, which was round 4, 5, whatever it was, you know, Lando got on the podium. Yeah. So they still had a good package. The problem is now all these other teams seem to be catching up. And then comes the question. And this is what I've said this. I feel for Lando because he's started at McLaren, his F1 career, and they've supported him through. And he's got to this stage where he does need to make a decision. And it's, does he stick with McLaren, that project's long-term, and believe that they will deliver him a title-winning competitive car eventually? Or does he, because, you know, the kid's crazy quick, like he's put himself on the map and he will get these opportunities if he really wants, whether it's a, you know, a Red Bull at some stage, whether it's replacing Lewis at Mercedes at some stage, I don't know. Like, that's the difficult, that's the quandary he finds himself in, because he's proven that, I think anyway, that if you give him a top car, he will, like the amount of podiums he's converted in that McLaren is insane.
He's achieved everything he can in a midfield car. Like, yes, Russia aside, even if you think that it was his,
I still think that was more on the team.
Yeah, I think it was both on, you know, it was on both sides. But apart from that, you know, he was the only driver to get a podium, you know, last season outside of the top three teams. He's had various podiums over the years. He's had a pole position as well, Russia 2021. Yeah. So he's achieved, he's finished best of the rest, you know, a few years. So he's achieved everything he can in a midfield car. And it's just like, we need to see him now under that next level of pressure of scrutiny with a race winning car, those expectations, because I think he's built for it.
Yeah, no, I think he is as well. I think he can, because obviously what I will say is like the seat that he's held has been kind of like a low pressure but high pressure seat at the same time. Like being in the midfield itself is just high pressure. There's just so many cars around. It's just dog eat dog all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo to go up against and has beaten him. But high pressure, real, real high pressure situation is when you're fighting for a title. And we've seen Charles Leclerc crack with that a little bit. We've seen, we've not seen George crack under it when he had the opportunity to win in Brazil, but it's an entirely different pressure.
But he was still making some mistakes. Even George had a few kind of howlers like last season. Yeah, he had that kind of stretch of like Austin. 3-4 races. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think it takes a long time to, I think it takes longer than maybe we give credit for a driver to really get all of the years under their belt to become that well-rounded race driver. Like I feel like Max last season, that was his first year where I just felt like, and yeah, you sure he had, I just felt like he just didn't put a foot right in it. I feel like he had everything and his decision making, and maybe it's easier to make those decisions when there's not quite as much pressure of, you know, like in 2021 when Lewis was breathing down his neck the whole season. But like I just feel like, what was it, I think it's Franz Tost, I think there's a quote from him saying like, and he heads up AlphaTauri, and he was saying like, you need to like to really, it's 3 years. After 3 years, you're not like consistently, you're not like 95% of the way there, then that's
it. You're not making it.
You're not making it. You know what I mean? Because after that, then it's like diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. You see big development in your first year, a bit more in second, and then it's just like incremental improvements, but that's what it takes to be successful.
And I think, to be fair, I can equate that to Lando, because he started in 2019. I think 2021, like that first year up against Ricciardo when Sainz left, I think he took a really big jump up from 2020 to 2021. That was the year for me where I know Ricciardo got the win, but Lando was incredible. He was, I'm never going to forget this, like in midway through the season during Hungary, like after the Hungarian Grand Prix, he was third in the championship. He was ahead of Perez and ahead of Bottas after the Hungarian Grand Prix, which again is just before the summer break.
That
is nuts. And so the guy, you know, when he was given a really good car, he was like troubling the likes of Bottas and, you know, Perez in
the race
champion.
Where Bottas went bowling.
Took out Perez, took out Max.
I remember that was, he'd been on a run of like 18 races in a row scoring points, I think, up until that point.
But again, that's not 3 or 4 races into the season. That's halfway through, third in the championship. So yeah, but how, and again, this was really cool about the, me and Tommy did our live show yesterday. We actually got to ask fans, we don't know what's going to happen in Red Bull, you know, the whole driver situation, it's year to year. I don't care how many years like Perez is given a contract for, it's a year to year kind of thing. And like, if it doesn't work out next year and like potentially, you know, they are looking at replacements, we actually did ask a bunch of like kind of, you know, fans, F1 fans, if you were Lando Norris, if you got the chance to go into Red Bull in 2024 as Max's number two, you know, would you go for it? And there was like 70% of the people like put their hands up like, yes, you take that chance. Even up against Max as a kind of number two, so to speak, you would go straight away if you were Lando. Like 70% of the people put their hand up. So people feel like Lando needs to be in a race winning car, whatever the circumstances.
That's interesting though. Do you guys think that? Because I obviously do hear it from the sense of like, ultimately you're just going to be in a race winning car. Mm. Like from a straight just swap perspective of performance, you're going from a McLaren, which is going to be top of the midfield at best seemingly for next season, to a car that just dominated last year, won the constructors, won the drivers' championship, whatever. But obviously I still maintain that the car, the only man who can really extract the most out of a Red Bull design the way that it is Max Verstappen. You know, it's so light to drive. It's a car that is like, you almost have to, if you've driven anything else, you have to relearn how to drive a Formula One car, yeah. Which is why we've seen Sergio Perez struggle, why we've seen established, like, younger drivers like Albon and Gasly struggle as well.
And then succeed afterwards. Like
anywhere else they were other than that. So from Lando's perspective, would there be a little bit of trepidation there? You don't want to go and like ruin your stock. Yeah, get slapped about by Max.
You're right. I mean, you see,
not
established
that would happen. He's a very good driver.
Yeah. But like, no, but it could like
in
no
that
one's
car specifically.
Yeah, no one's infallible to it. I mean, you look at when even staying in the same team. I mean, you go Vettel from 2013 to 2014. He clearly didn't get along with that Red Bull anywhere near as well as he did the previous generation. Yeah, exactly. Look at Ricciardo when he went from Renault to McLaren. Like, you know. There's certain drivers, like this is where I think Alonso puts himself right up there, because he just seems to be able to drive everything. Doesn't matter what type of car you give him quick. And you're right, that would be a risk for Lando. I think that...
Because we haven't seen that adaptability from Lando yet, because he hasn't been kind of at
different teams yet. Yeah, he hasn't had the opportunity to showcase it, I guess.
But maybe that's the opportunity. Maybe this is it. Like, if he has the confidence that I don't care who it is in the other car. Like, if you want to win a world championship, there is no easy route to it. Like,
no, there
even when you have a dominant car, like with Rosberg, for example.
Still got to beat your teammate.
You have to beat Hamilton.
Yeah.
You
know? But then the 21 and the 22 cars were very fundamentally different cars.
And he managed that.
And he managed to still have that same gap to Daniel as well, which I thought was like, that was Daniel's opportunity. I felt like it's new generation of cars, fresh slate. But I mean, you know, then there's clearly like drivers talk about this, like the cars having, even across generations, having similar philosophies because they're built by the same team at the end of the day. So they've got certain characteristics, but I don't know if I'm not so sure that him moving to like a Red Bull would be the right move. I just, you know, that's the thing. It's so much of a gamble. This is what plagued Alonso's career for so long. You always look in hindsight. I'd be like, oh, well, that was the wrong decision. Well, yeah, you say that at the time. But at the time, it probably wasn't the wrong decision. And he's taken this gamble on Aston Martin at the moment, which, I mean, from what we've seen in testing, looks like it might be about to pay off in a big way.
Yeah.
A lot of hype around that team. There's a lot of... I mean, I've been kind of right on that bandwagon.
Are we on the gas? Should we get the oxygen tanks?
Yeah.
Inhaling the gas?
The Martin copium.
For this one.
Well, it's not even copium.
No, it's the opposite.
The opposite.
Hopium.
Yeah, hopium.
Exactly. No, I am all here for it. I am all here for it. To even think about Fernando potentially having like maybe a podium capable car. He's that type of driver where you give him an inch and he'll take a mile. Like, he will absolutely push that team to the ragged edge. Now, it might be over the limit at some point, but whatever car they're going to give him, I'm excited. Because Fernando Alonso, he's still operating at such a high level. He's still...
You can't argue with that.
And it's something I've always said, whether you love or you hate Fernando Alonso, he's box office. There's always something going on with him, like either good
everyone
or bad.
Everyone feels something.
There's a drama.
You love him or you know
there's,
what I mean?
There's not a single person who's just like, neutral.
No
real opinion.
It's like one way or the other. Like, you either despise him or you just love him.
That's a trait of like the greats, you know what I mean? I feel like that's something that all, that doesn't matter what sport you're talking about.
But that's also, I think, his personality as well.
He's Zlatan.
Exactly. Because he's like the biggest hype man for himself. Like, there's no one else. He loves to gas himself up. Like, he knows that, he feels like he's the greatest of all time, honestly. Like, that's
what was
why
that clip of him talking.
So it was right after the preseason testing. He's at some kind of like Aston Martin, maybe like sponsor event. And first of all, no one knows what all of the other teams are doing, but he's like, yeah, both of us and Ferrari had like 57 laps of fuel doing like race stints, and we were actually quicker than Ferrari. And then you can hear the crowd like going, ooh.
No, that's because it's all the shareholders.
Literally. You don't even know what engine mode anyone's running, but you keep gassing yourself and Aston Martin up. Yeah, I'm loving it, bro. But he's kind of setting himself up for either being absolutely incredible or massive failure, basically.
And this is the thing, right? As much as, we don't know fuel loads, the paddock's a very small place. Word does travel.
Yeah, yeah.
These rumours typically, when they're so, you know, such strong rumours amongst people, not you know, you get rumours on Twitter and all that nonsense. When they're strong rumours from within the paddock, right?
Are you saying Twitter is not a reliable source of information?
Source, Twitter.
What?
When that's the case, I feel like you can give a lot more, like, you know, credibility to rumours like that. Mm-hmm. When it's, because people talk like these team personnel, like they fly on planes with each other. Yeah, like everyone's, it's not like super, like everyone's just in their own lane.
Stefano, what engine mode were you running?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, people would definitely chat and be like, oh yeah, Fernando's actually running full tank and he's looking pretty quick. But I don't know. Do you think that this is, because one thing as well, if we are saying Aston Martin, people talk, I mean, talking about them as high as like second, third.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's people lose, they're saying like even quicker than a Mercedes. Those people need to be.
That's probably cap, I'll be honest.
Yeah. They're your customers and that's the apprentice versus the
master.
Yeah, there you go.
Was it day three where he was third? I can't remember.
Day one he was second behind Verstappen, and I think
it was the long run.
Yeah, and I think day two was also quite good as well. But the thing is, even from people that I've like read, you know, like the race and stuff, like just watching the car, like forgetting the times, it just looks good. Like some cars where you're watching track side, and I experienced this last year. Like it's actually amazing. And I'm not, obviously I don't analyze cars, but as a fan, when you actually look at a car and like, especially when you focus on one corner, you can tell when someone's like ragging a car and just like getting the lap time out of it.
Yeah.
And then the other drivers are just, the lap time's coming easy. Like the car is not even moving. It looks like there's way more left in the tank. Yeah. And that's what people are saying, that the Aston Martin just, it looks boringly quick. Like there's plenty more left. So that's why people are excited. Like when you look at the Alpine, for example, it was like bouncing about everywhere and you can see the drivers like
stiff.
They're pushing it, but it's hard work. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's why people are excited, because the body language of the car just looks good.
Yeah.
And obviously in Fernando's
hands. Language of the car.
There you go. You see.
And that,
expert that's analysis right here.
That's the thing. In Fernando's hands, it also makes it, if the, you know, they're going to be fighting to get into the top three,
just realize, Seb,
you know what I mean? Like he kind of, it was almost, that was the plan, and he's left just as it's maybe starting to deliver.
I feel like he doesn't care though. Part of me thinks that Sebastian Vettel would have just been like, even if the car had genuinely got like close to competing at the end of the season, would have just been like, nah, man, I just want to go fishing or something. I don't need Formula One anymore. I don't know.
He was chilling. He's got a four world championships. Like, I think the last few Aston Martin years, like, it was just a punt for him after Aston Martin. Like, maybe they strike gold again because they were so good in 2020. Mm. Like, maybe somehow they'll be great. But I think Vettel is more than content with being a four-time world champion, driving for Red Bull and Ferrari. And he was just like, I'm going to go, fishing with the kids, bro.
You know what this does mean, though? Lance Stroll could be fighting for serious podiums.
Could you imagine another Stroll masterclass?
Once he gets better, we still don't know how long he's going to be out for with his broken wrist.
True. I knew this was going to happen. When they were like, oh yeah, he's been in a cycling accident, he was like, yeah, he'll be out for testing. I was like, you know, the race is like a week after.
Yeah.
He ain't making it.
What are you talking about? A broken wrist is not like, oh, I'll just bandage that up. I'll be fine later.
He's driving as well. Like, he kind of needs that a little bit.
That's like so 2-3 weeks, surely.
F1 drivers need to get like they need to wear more padding on these bikes, because what, Fernando really hurt himself, didn't he, a couple of years ago?
Yeah but Fernando's built different. Like he had a bike crash, had jaw surgery, and he was still in testing. He was still turned up. Like, I'm fine.
Speak like in sign language and post race interview.
That's a very Fernando thing that he just pushes through the pain. No, I think, you know, Stroll's obviously going to be a bit of a setback. They've confirmed that if he can't make the first race, which it's not looking likely, then Felipe Drogovic will deputise, and he seemed to do a pretty good job. F2 champion last year in testing.
Well, I'm happy to see him get the chance.
I am as well, actually.
Yeah, look, as much as obviously the vibe of Vettel and Alonso in an Aston Martin, right? Vettel replacing Stroll just for the start of the season. Immaculate. Like, don't get me wrong.
Could you imagine?
Of course. But like, Seb's had his time. He's retired. Felipe deserves this opportunity. He's a reserve driver for a reason. He's done that mileage and testing. You know, Seb's not going to be like physically prepared either to jump into that car, because he's
not doing any training.
He had a dad bod by the end of last year.
You know, he's been at Burger King every other day. Maybe we don't know. Like, he's living that life, you know, that post F1 life.
Exactly. So, he's just treating himself.
Yeah,
share box or nuggets. It's fine.
But
all of the above, mate.
One thing I do want to ask, and we've talked about this driver time and time again, but is Lance Stroll, if they're going to be fighting with maybe Mercedes,
no.
P3,
Let him finish.
There we
let
go.
Him finish.
No, you know what? Like, that clearly sets your standard of where you are
cook.
With Lance.
Let Niren cook.
Let me step it up. Who let him cook? Who let Lance
is
cook?
Is he going to be the part that holds that team back? Because when you're fighting,
I want to change my answer now.
When you're fighting in the midfield. Wait, I'm wondering what you thought I was going to ask.
Yeah, I thought you were just going to say, is he good enough? He
no, because I think Lance is like a very capable F1 driver.
Yeah,
Do I think he's got the talent to fight at the very front for a championship? No, I don't. Not in my opinion.
Fernando said he does.
Fernando might have said he does. And yeah, maybe he does. But like in a midfield car, I think having Lance Stroll as a driver, that's fine. Yeah, he makes a few silly decisions, but he also got in the points quite a lot last year. Do we think if they're going to really break into this top three, you know, does Lawrence have to then be like, you know what, Lance, we'll get you a seat for another team lower down the order and
I'll buy you another team. Don't worry about that.
The man's a multi-billionaire. Like we're talking what Ted Kravitz saying about £1 billion for a team. So he could just buy another, he could buy AlphaTauri off of Red Bull.
They're thinking about call it Lagonda, make it like the Aston Martin, what is it, B team. Lance, you get in there.
Yeah, go there, mate.
Genuinely, like, do you think if you were Lawrence Stroll, if you were Lance Stroll's dad,
made a Christmas meal.
What would you do though? If you're fighting at the front and you feel like Lance is that going to hold you back from not only getting a constructors, but also being that support to your number one driver is not close enough, then to then stop you winning the championship as well, what would you do?
I mean, I think at the moment when it comes to Lance Stroll, he is driving. In my opinion, Lance is a good driver. Let's just get that kind of straight. He is a good
driver. He's not a Latifi.
He is not a Latifi. I've talked about in his rookie season, he scored a podium. He also is the youngest ever person to start on the front row in Formula One. And when he was given some good cars, like he was, you know, that pole position in, I think, Turkey 2020.
Yeah, it was great in all
of
these, the wet.
And yeah, also, he's very good in the wet. And that is a mark of a good driver. Yeah. You cannot just be a mug and turn up like and have a good race in the wet. So there is talent there, but he is one of the most inconsistent drivers on the grid. And that's his biggest Achilles heel. And I think at the moment, so again, he is a good driver, but at the moment, he is driving, in my opinion, at his level. In the midfield, you know, maybe fighting for a P5 or a P6 on a really good day, maybe a podium on a madness day. You know, that's where I think his level is. I don't think he's built for that, you know, top three or top two teams kind of fighting for the wins when all of the pressure is, that scrutiny is on you every single time. Because we're watching, I've said, like the six drivers in the top three teams, like Sergio Perez at the moment is probably maybe the worst of those six drivers, you know, with Carlos Sainz. And Perez was way better than Stroll. So that gives you a little bit of like, a comparison. And look at how Perez, you know, some people are looking at Perez and going like, he's not doing a good enough job. You know, he should even be at Red Bull. And that's the pressure that Lance is going to come under when you're given a race winning car.
Yeah. I always look at Valtteri Bottas as well and how highly rated Bottas was at Williams.
He was a great driver.
Went to Mercedes and then just kind of got a bit slapped.
Mm.
Again, was sick on his day. And it wasn't like he was finishing like seventh in the championship in Mercedes or whatever. But like, our perception of Bottas changed so much when he was in a top
one
car.
Definitely.
Lance Stroll already has the perception of realistically you could just slap anyone else in that car you could slap a couple of F2 drivers in that car and it might do better. If you then saw him in the environment of a top three car, Jesus Christ, that could really
And that's why that whole kind of, the first job is to beat your teammate. That's why that narrative is such a true one, because that is where you get ultimately judged. You can only really be judged relative to your teammate because the cars are so different. And maybe as time goes on and if these cars start to come within, you know, a second, you know, from front to back in qualifying, as these cars get more similar, we will hopefully see the drivers then, like we see in the junior categories more so, the driver makes a bigger difference. Yes, you do still need to be at a good team, but you can, you know, if you've got a good driver, that can make the difference. It doesn't matter how well, you know, Alex Albon was driving last year, he's not winning a race on merit. That's not going to happen because he doesn't have the package underneath him. So it's like, as much as I'd love it to, that would be the dream, of course. But I guess where, you know, Red Bull was so, it ended the season particularly so dominant, you know, first third of the season, you'd be like Ferrari right up there, but it went very ski whiff for them. But it's looking ominous.
What does that mean, by the way? I've never heard that before.
You never heard ski whiff?
Ski whiff? Where does that come from?
Ski whiff. Just that.
dodgy.
I'm gonna, I'm gonna have to add that to my dictionary. You know, add that to my locker.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a good one.
I can't remember the last time I said that. Yeah. But what do we think? Because it is looking ominous. Red Bull, they're looking good.
Yeah,
Max was very confident, very happy, smiles all round at Red Bull.
Yeah,
it was one of those. I think it was one of those testing experiences where like. He didn't even need to say anything. Like you saw from the very, because I was watching like the very first day, straight up, bang, he was at the top. And obviously I know times I mean like the most, but he was always at the top. Doesn't matter what fuel, what engine modes, what tires he was on. He was always right up there. And even Checo got in at the end, you know, right at the end in the third day and went just, you know, went top again. So
not even the softest tire as well.
Exactly. And in the first day, Max did 157 laps the entire day by himself. 157, like, so yeah, it's looking ominous, but ultimately this is what sport is all about. You know, when Mercedes were dominating, they were the team to beat, and the question was like, who's gonna knock them down? It looked like it might be Ferrari with Seb, and obviously then eventually it was kind of, you know, Max with Red Bull, and ultimately now Red Bull are the benchmark. And ultimately I think with Max, he's such a good driver. Like, he to me is the best driver on the grid at the moment. He is the guy that everyone needs to beat. He is, again, at the top of that echelon, at the top of the tree, and who's going to beat him? You know, that's what it's all about. So yeah, I don't think it's all over, by the way. You know, it's ultimately, I don't think we didn't see too much from Ferrari. So where they are is a little bit difficult to judge. Also Mercedes, you know, they could spring a surprise. So even though Red Bull might start as the favorites, it's about who can beat them. So yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, it's easy to get carried away thinking that Max is completely untouchable. Mm-hmm. I think especially because of how impressive he was last year, but also how convincingly he's beaten his teammates for so long now. But no one's untouchable. I think there's plenty of drivers who can go toe-to-toe with Max. Yes, I think Max is the best driver in F1 right now, but like give them the machinery, and I think, you know, Lewis, George, Charles, like Lando, I think there's plenty of drivers on the grid. Cool. Fernando, who could go wheel-to-wheel mm-hmm. with Max. Like, it could happen. It just needs to... The other teams not only need to catch up with Red Bull, development-wise, but they need to kind of, you know, somewhat outdevelop Red Bull to give a driver a chance, because you've got that little bit of Max tax where he's just so good.
Nice.
He just...
I'm put that on the t-shirt, by the way. Yeah. Max tax. Yeah. Copyright that last
I guess that makes it sound negative, doesn't it? Because the tax is...
Typically,
I mean, I love paying my taxes, HMRC, if you're watching. I really enjoy
that. I don't.
They're coming for you. Don't say that, hey. God, what are you doing? But yeah, like, I think in terms of... Maybe we won't go rank all 10, but I think... In terms of ignoring drivers, just from what we've seen in testing, from the cars, who are we saying the top three strongest teams are? And maybe, should we start with bottom three? Because I think it's really difficult to rate the teams at the bottom.
It's tough this year. Because even, you look at Williams, who were probably, you know, bottom of the pile,
yeah,
you'd argue last year.
But they had a clean test.
They were calm. And I think in terms of like, from just overall lap time, they were the ones that gained the most from the last test.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
Like almost 3 seconds, I think.
More than 2.5, I think it was.
Yeah. So yeah, they looked solid. Haas looked all right. AlphaTauri did a lot of running.
The things about AlphaTauri, they were never quite up there with the times. Like you could do loads of, and I was talking with Blake about this, like you could have a car that just keeps on running and keeps on pounding around doing the most laps, but if it's not fast, then ultimately that's the problem. I feel like AlphaTauri might start potentially at the back.
A lot of cars just keep running though.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if we're being honest, cars don't break down like they used to. Like having a car that was indestructible 20 years ago was blessed because 10 cars would retire. They'd blow up.
That's a good point.
Whereas now you easily
just get into the end of the race was like points.
Yeah, exactly. Love it. Yeah, you get races now where there's like one retirement or like two DNFs.
So yeah.
It's not enough to have a bulletproof car.
I put AlphaTauri bottom in my predictions and I've not got too much confidence in their package.
I've said it from day one. One, the livery makes it look like a slow car.
It looked a little bit better in testing, but it's terrible. I just don't know how
to explain it, but there's certain cars, but you just look at the livery and go, that's finishing like ninth in the constructors.
You just get that vibe.
You know that it is.
You know,
like,
when
it has to.
You know when they say cars are designed to like look like they're going fast while standing still? The AlphaTauri is like the opposite of that. When it's going like through the speed trap, DRS open, it's just static.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a picture. It just looks like it's just there.
You would think adding red would make it look faster, but
it just doesn't
not.
Work. No, I don't like it. Because even from the front angle, you've got like a kind of a dark front wing. You've got the noses white. You've got like a bunch of red.
It looks better in real life than the renders.
But usually really do. I mean, I remember I had the exact same thought about Williams last year. I was like, yeah, P10 confirmed.
Williams has grown on me a little bit, and this year,
I quite like it now.
I think it's better this year, but last year specifically, I was like, oh my God, what's that like golf jumper thing going on the engine cover? I wasn't sure about that. But to me at the moment, I think it's AlphaTauri and then Williams. I can't give Williams too much more because I need to see them like actually do it because they
haven't seen enough.
They need to prove that they can actually not be a backmarker for once. So like
genuinely, they weren't far off it last season, but they were like tangibly last.
I would put Haas as the third bottom just because I think they'll, like last year, they'll have a strong car at the start of the year, but I don't think they'll be able to keep up the development like the other teams will be able to necessarily.
Are we ranking them like what they look like right after testing, or are you talking like a prediction for the season?
Just I think where those cars are at the moment, like right now,
just in terms of just raw pace, not to do with the drivers. Okay.
No, ignoring where we think the car ranges are.
I'd put McLaren after that. I'd put AlphaTauri, Williams, and I'd put McLaren after that. I don't think they're much better off than they were last year at this point. That doesn't mean that That doesn't mean that they can't get on the podium at some point in the season.
Pass, I think,
because they can develop a car. So at the moment, I'm going to go McLaren after Williams.
I think I'd still put Haas after Williams, but then McLaren is like around about that zone. Alpine as well. I think pace wise, Alpine, you know, again, the body language of the car didn't look, you know, great at times.
Because I think part of the perception around McLaren is that, you know, we expect them to be top end midfield and they're slightly underperforming. And so you don't want to like overcorrect and be like, well, they're
in the bin.
They're like Marussia now. You know what I mean? Like, it's not gone that bad necessarily. Well, hopefully not. But it also makes me, I love Andreas Stella, Seidel, sorry. Keep getting them mixed up. It does kind of make me question him, I'm not gonna lie. Obviously he joined the team in 2019, peaked in 2020. 21 was great as well, 22 wasn't so good, 23 really bad start. How much of that is on the outgoing team principal? I think there's valid
also
questions.
Why
there.
Did he jump? I mean, he's got surely, if he was there from day one, he's got a great driver, he seems to have great facilities there, so what has he seen that's made him more excited to work for, I know he's worked for kind of the VW group before, but why has he jumped ship from McLaren? I mean, that's a great, you know, so much heritage, so much, you know, brand value. Is it just the fact that he's going to be kind of the CEO of that team, you know, over a team principal? Just the step up in title, you know?
The thing is, again, I'm not just going to chuck rumors out into the ecosphere, but like, heard enough rumors from enough different people to not have that much confidence in McLaren. I guess that's just the way I'm seeing it, right?
Fair enough.
And there's no smoke without fire. But what about the top three? And is Aston Martin sneaking to any of our top three at the minute in terms of where the cars are right now?
Maybe for vibes. I'm thinking about it. I am thinking about it.
Who's dropping out there? Who's dropping out?
Because this is...
I don't think Mercedes are poor, though. That's the thing.
The thing is, over the course of a season, you'd think that a team like Mercedes, you know, if there's a little bit of a stumbling block at the start, like exactly like McLaren last year, again, stumbling block at the start, but then got on the podium, you know, four races later, you know, I feel like Aston Martin could quite conceivably be quicker than Mercedes right now. I would say they would be right now. I think by the end of the year, Mercedes will be ahead of them.
That's what we saw last year, though. Like the Mercedes developed really well, really well throughout the season. And ultimately, they almost beat Ferrari right at the end, didn't they? Like they were close. And I think that I think that Mercedes are fine. Honestly, I think that, yes, maybe they're not on that Red Bull level, but no team is. And I still, again, at the moment, I think they're third, but I actually think they're going to beat Ferrari by the end of the season. I think they're going to be second at the least. Yeah,
probably. Look, if this was down to vibes alone,
which
we love vibes.
I'm not wrong with that.
Should I do it just down to vibes?
That's what the show's all about.
Say it with your chest.
Say less. Okay, right. Cool. Aston Martin a third. Aston Martin a third.
And who's fourth, though? Who's dropping out?
Oh, who's dropping out?
Red Bull.
Vibes. Let me think. That is a shout, you know. No, their vibes were too immaculate. That's the problem during Bahrain. I'm going to say Ferrari based on purely vibes.
Wow. Fred's at the wheel.
Yeah, Fred's.
Ferrari
have dropped to fourth on vibes alone. And I'm putting Aston Martin third, on the vibometer.
I think Ferrari are going to be ahead of Mercedes this year. As much as Mercedes had the stronger end to last year, I think Ferrari have made that. Their speed traps were really strong. Like they've seemed to have sorted out.
You know, this corner as well, though.
Yeah, but they were great in the corners like that. That wasn't a problem for them. They were arguably, in the higher downforce stuff, that's where they really shone. And it was Red Bull in the straight lines. But now they've got that chassis where they can, they've got a lot of downforce in that car. For me, right now, it's Aston Martin, Ferrari, Red Bull, 3-2-1.
Okay, Ferrari, you're back on vibes.
When you said Aston Martin first, I thought we meant like right at the top. Alonso World Champion.
Getting that carried.
I'm here for that.
I mean, that would be immaculate, obviously.
Could you imagine?
I'd be buzzing, honestly.
53-year-old Fernando Alonso wins.
The sport. Well, look, the sport will
you
change.
You are the world champion, Fernando. The world champion.
The sport has changed many. Actually, because, yeah, they've got De La Rosa and Whitmarsh, who were both ex-McLaren from the glory days.
And so, Van Dorn. And Van Dorn.
Yeah,
as well.
All the band back McLaren together.
B, yeah.
But, I mean, the sport has changed a lot. It will change a lot. And there have actually been rumours around AlphaTauri's future, which I think was reported by Amos, German media,
Toby
Grunert, and he was saying that obviously since Dietrich Mateschitz passed away, there's a new board at the top of Red Bull, new people in charge, and basically saying that the cost of running AlphaTauri
not financially viable
is not justified to promote a clothing brand.
Yeah.
So they are either going to relocate the team to the UK or...
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Or look to sell, which is, I think it was a matter of time. Like 4 months ago, I made a video literally saying this, so called it, just saying. It doesn't make sense to, like, you've got a car at the front of the field, just stick the AlphaTauri logo on the side pod, like there's space. And you're going to get more, like just as much visibility, if not more.
It's not, you're going to get just as much exposure at the very front. And you can still do all that clothing stuff.
Max Checo, Christian, they're all modeling the clothes anyway.
Yeah. With absolutely zero source, by the way. I mean, Yuki and Pierre, like, they brought the source of that AlphaTauri merch. Yeah. Like, Checo and Max just ain't doing it.
Do you reckon De Vries is going to bring the source to the merch?
Absolutely not.
I don't think. Yuki's still the source boy.
There was a scene in Drive to Survive where Yuki's like, it was like a random scene where Yuki was walking into the paddock and literally some fan goes, "You look good." And I was like, and Yuki's like, "Thanks." He was right.
I'll be totally honest, like, I've not been on AlphaTauri's clothing website once in my whole life. So is it doing a good job?
Is it working?
Is it passing the vibe check?
Because F1's a market machine. Mercedes are in it because they want to sell you cars. Red Bull are in it because they want to sell you drinks. Renault are in it because they want to sell you Twizzies.
Alpine's whatever.
The little car.
Alpine want to sell you the one car they make. The only one car.
That no one's ever seen on the road.
What are you, just please release one. I think they're going to do like a Renault 5 electric as an Alpine, which would be sick.
Yeah,
but
do
please
that.
Please launch it.
Yeah, do that. Get that in F1 as well.
I'll buy that. But yeah, what do we think? AlphaTauri.
In the car.
He's like, knees are poking through both windows.
Because it's tiny.
It'll be perfect size for me.
I was going to say, built for you, mate. No, what do we think? Do we think... I think it makes sense as a decision. Moving the team to the UK, all the costs associated with that.
Just sell it.
Yeah. Because I think someone like a Porsche, I think they would love to come in. Andretti might look at that as well. You know, it's a bit strange, maybe for Andretti, because they want to be American based. Like, they have that American factory that they're building in Indianapolis, I think. So having that finance.
That's not going to be ready till like 2020. I think 6, maybe even 7 anyway.
But that's when they would, I suppose, come in though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but so they're part of their plan anyway was to set up a base in the UK, and that would be their engineering base. So you know what Haas have in Maranello?
Yeah.
Andretti would start that in the UK. That was part of their original plan. So if they bought Faenza, they could then have that engineering base in Faenza, and then still eventually move the team to Indianapolis. Oh, that would make a lot of sense, I think.
It does, but for what it's worth, it still doesn't fix the problem that F1 has in just not allowing extra teams.
We need more teams.
So I feel like it would almost be like, it's a win, but at what cost? It's one of those ones, right? It's like, okay, we've still proven that it's quite literally impossible to join
and
a
also,
new team.
And also, the thing I do like about AlphaTauri, as much as like I'm not a massive fan of the team because there's no connection, I feel like, to that team, really. But I do like that they are a B team that allows young drivers to come through. Like, that's what I do like about Red Bull. You can say whatever you want about them, but like, if a driver of theirs does do well in Formula 2, they will give them a shot. Maybe it will just be 1 year and it'll be kind of a sink or swim situation, but they do give their young drivers a shot. And to have like a B team like that, or a sister team, as I think they call it, I think it's really important. So I'll be sad to see them go in that sense where we might not get more kind of, we might not get another Max Verstappen kind of be given that chance at like 17 or 18 years old. So that's the only thing I think I'll miss.
That team goes true. So many drivers, Vettel, Verstappen, Ricciardo, Sainz, like Albon, there's so many drivers.
There's so many drivers that also aren't like in the sport anymore.
Kvyat, like Gasly, Vern, Jev, like so many.
Jaime Alguersuari.
Yeah. Sebastian Bourdais.
IndyCar was a throwback.
Yeah.
Like, what a man.
No, and that's nice. It's nice, of course, given, but I think when the grid will eventually, because I think it will eventually expand to 12, then it's a decision, is it worth having a whole team to promote Clovin and to be this step up? I think it makes sense to sell. I don't think it makes sense to keep hold of that team.
Yeah, it's sad though, because like you said,
End of an era, kind of.
Yeah, I miss that idea of having like a little junior step up team. Cool. You don't want an F2, but realistically, Red Bull are sick right now, so you're probably not ready for that. So let's just ease you in, slap you in a Toro Rosso back in the day, miss you, babes. Back in the day, and boom, if you do well there, you get the step
just
up.
Marinate you in the team until you're ready.
There's loads of Red Bull juniors right now that are probably looking at this and like, oh, I'm sure.
And
Maloney just signed like 3 weeks ago.
Whatever you want to say about the Red Bull program, and obviously they do have their critics, like look at how many drivers on the grid, like actually even last season, someone like a Seb as well, look how many drivers have had at some point some kind of Red Bull affiliation.
Like 8 on the grid last year alone or something.
Yeah, I mean, again, it'll be crazy. Like, even at the top teams, you have obviously the two Red Bull drivers. You look at Ferrari, you have like Sainz again, Vettel just drives like that, and obviously the AlphaTauri. So yeah, it's got to be over a third of the grid.
I think there's 6 F2 juniors who are Red Bull affiliated as well. So they're all running the Red Bull livery with slightly different rear wings and slightly different side pods. They're really hard. It's like Enzo Fittipaldi stands out the most because it's bright yellow.
Yeah. Everyone else, Alex Jackman.
It all like, yeah, exactly.
And drivers need that. And drivers need that sponsorship though. Drivers need that sponsorship. So like, even if they won't get to Formula One, like just to have Red Bull there, I think is really important. And again, you might not get to Formula One, but at least you get the opportunity financially to be supported and at least show your talent. So yeah, in one sense, I would be sad to see AlphaTauri go. I do miss Toro Rosso though. Those kind of electric blue liveries, they absolutely slapped, by the way, off topic, but yeah.
Also, you know what? Let's just bring back Minardi, man. Fuck it. let's just get him back.
20 seconds off the pace for the vibes.
Vibes. They passed the vibe check, though.
Alonso made his debut for Minardi, so that was back in the day.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly,
that's
man.
A good point.
And Webber. Webber.
Yeah. Marky Mark. Marky all Mark. The best drivers.
All
Minardi.
All the best. All the best, man. I remember seeing like a report somewhere as well this week. I know we mentioned Andretti there as well, where the teams are hoping to, I think, increase the amount of money that a team needs to provide before they can even think.
It's 200 million at the moment.
They want to raise it to 600, don't they? They want to triple it.
The anti-dilution, they want to kind of raise it even more. Unbelievable. But I think the way it works is that...
Disgusting!
By putting in... disgusting. I guarantee that's Toto, by the way. He is all about his money. Like, want their money, but...
Well, he's not a... You know, he comes from investment. Like, that's his bread and butter. That's where he comes. He invested in Williams and he owns a third of that Mercedes AMG Petronas F1 team.
I bet his shares have gone up since investing in 2014 in that team.
But it makes... Right, so if you've got a 600 million buy-in, Aston Martin are spending about 2 to 250 million on their new headquarters. That is what puts it at this 850 figure that, as Ted Kravitz has mentioned, is like if you wanted to buy an F1 team. Because then obviously you've got a facility, you've got to either buy or rent a facility, you've got to hire all the staff, you've got to spend all this time in R&D to build a car, blah, blah, blah. Like, and to buy a team that is up and going already,
cost cap's 150.
It makes sense, but yeah, it must be hard to kind of swallow that as such a massive fee to go in, and also that's to be paid to your competitors.
Yeah,
it's got that 60 mil a pop.
Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, in the long term, it's an investment, isn't it? Because Formula One, it looks like it's only getting bigger.
Yes,
and so that's the point of the anti-dilution fee, because it's all about, okay, the pot is going to get smaller for all of us, but theoretically, over the years, every single year, we should get more and more and more as the sport grows. So that's what it's all about. It's trying to offset the losses in the short term, but the reason why the teams want to raise it to 600 million is that they're basically going, the sport is growing so quickly and the money that we're earning year on year is increasing so fast that 200 mil is not going to cover it. You know, a team that has to pay 200 mil to get into the sport, they're going to earn that back within, like, you know, 6 years or something. So it's pretty short. So that's why they want to raise it even more. But I think, yeah, it is greed at the end of the day, isn't it? Because they don't want another team coming in.
And the teams are going to act in their best interest. You kind of can't expect them not to.
That's why it always comes back to that conversation of, you know, the teams have too much power, really.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can't seriously expect the teams to be all kind of, oh yeah, let them all in. I mean, okay, maybe Zach's being, you know, he seems to be quite positive about Andretti, but then
him and his American buddies, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, it's probably like playing
What's
golf.
Up, Mario?
With, golf with Mario. That's like a weird version of Luigi.
That was my. I'm working on that.
American Boston version of Luigi. That's pretty. But also, another bit of news as well, outside of that, they've finally fixed Catalunya. Thank fuck. They've got rid of that stupid chicane at the end of Catalunya.
Thank fuck.
Are we feeling
we'll
good?
We'll see if the fix works, though. You know,
S tier track now.
The S tier, brilliant. No, S-tier track.
Shit, I'll be honest with you, lads.
S for shit.
It was S for shit, yeah. I mean, to be fair, like, it was. I'll say to someone, I've never seen, unless I'm wrong, I have never seen an overtake in those, like, bar, like, maybe a lap one where obviously sometimes they will too, but like, what, during a race? Yeah, like, I've never seen an overtake in the chicane in a racing situation. Never.
But I'll be totally honest, it was completely pointless, but like, I feel like people are looking at it now going like, oh yeah, safe, man. It's a good track now. You're still going to get no overtaking, bro. Like, those last two turns now are dirtyair.org. Yeah, it's a wrap. You're not getting anything happening down that front straight.
Dirtyair.org. Put that on a t-shirt as well.
That chicane at Abu Dhabi that they got rid of, obviously that was to encourage overtaking into that turn four, obviously where Max threw up at the inside at Abu Dhabi, for example. Yeah. That wouldn't have happened. Imagine Abu Dhabi 21, but it's the old layout.
That actually would have changed it very drastically, you know?
Who's the champion out of that if it's still fixed?
You can't use that word. That's a very naughty word. Yeah,
that's
very
right. Can we edit that out? Edit that out.
We're allowed to swear him.
Christian Horner will never come on the show again. I think, you know what? Yeah, because obviously Max would have passed him down the straight into the back straight chicane.
I think he would have saved it for the back straight.
Yeah, he wouldn't have gone for it.
He wouldn't have necessarily been as close for that, you know? Yeah, that's in. But I think obviously you will be able to follow, even though it will be dirtyair.org. I like it's .org. It's like a,
not even .com. So
it's not a not for profit.
That's not Formula One.
It just means that. Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't sound very Formula One-y to me. It should be able to follow closer through there, even though it's dirty, yes, but closer and less dirty in these cars anyway. And then it means that overtakes into turn one. We did get some quality dive bombs into turn one.
It's a really long straight.
I think Checo did a really good one around the outside last season.
Maybe, I think I'm just happy to see, actually, just in general, like, even Abu Dhabi, like, I'm happy to see tracks kind of take feedback on board, because they hear that from the fans. They hear that, oh, this race is boring, whatever, whatever. And I'm happy that they're trying to change it, because it is not easy to reprofile a track, or, you know, like what Abu Dhabi did. But so I'm really happy that Catalunya have gone, right, we will try the old layout that perhaps will give you more of a chance to kind of go quicker. So I'm happy from that point of view that tracks are listening and taking the feedback on board from the fans. So, but we'll see how it goes, really.
Yeah. It's definitely better. To be fair, like, whilst I'm saying, like, dirty air and all that, like, jazz, it's just a better flow of a track.
Yeah.
Like, the chicane just completely broke.
It's just horrible. Like, if you ever played Catalunya, it's on most sim racing, like, there's on Forza back in the day.
Big old sausage curve.
So annoying.
Oh, God, yeah, it wasn't even a nice chicane. It was, just clobbering, like... Oh.
It was like that bit at Miami where the cars really have to slow down, because they have to slow them down so they don't fly up and... hit the bridge.
Yeah.
That's why they have to slow the cars down so much at that part of Miami.
Really?
Yeah. Because there's a bridge going above the track.
Right.
I remember reading about
crash like Weber has.
It's the bridge. Yeah.
Because it could be just, actually, I remember reading about that because it could be just like that corner in Miami. I think it's in the third sector. It could be just a 90 degree left.
Mm.
But they have to slow the cars down because basically, if you ever like crash there, you could end up on the motor highway. You could end up on the highway. Like,
that should be quite a sight.
That'd be quite a sight.
Unless the car goes over the bridge and then lands back down the other side.
Yeah. It's just a stunt jump.
And it makes the Tony Hawk kickflip sound.
do a kickflip.
No, that would be good. But listen, I think, like you say, it's nice that they're listening to feedback. But in terms of feedback, what I will say, and I know someone hasn't watched Drive to Survive yet this year.
Sorry, lads.
But I would say, overall, having watched all of it, generally, I would say it's been a strong season. There's been a bit less baity stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Few, little sound effects out of place, but nothing, I think, that fundamentally changes
what's happening during the season,
But there were some, again, look, we're not going to go over all the races and all the season, but there were, I think the bits that we look for as fans who are really invested is like the extra little nuggets of information or extra little insights that we get.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's been doing the rounds on socials, the team principal meeting.
Oh, I love that.
What do we make of it?
It was kind of, I mean, first of all, I do think that 20% of what Toto was saying was for the cameras, where he was like, you know, if we have a safety issue, it's going to be on you. And I was like, chill out, bro. It was a little bit for the cameras. And even Christian Horner's like, you know, is this just for the cameras?
Like,
what the fuck are we doing
here?
I'll come for you. And it's just like, chill out, mate, chill out. But I do like to see that, you know, either
big
way.
Scary man, though.
Yeah.
Big scary man. But I mean, the thing about Drive to Survive for me is that I don't even like enjoy the actual races part because like I've already seen them, you know, I've already seen the entire race.
You skip over the races, don't you?
Sometimes I do. Yeah. Cause like I've already seen like because some of the radios are not real. Like some of them are not even from that race. So
no.
I don't need to watch kind of a fake narrative of a race, but what I like is the little behind the scenes bit. Like, like that team principals I'm meeting where you can see Toto, he's scrambling because the others, they've been watching him for years, win all of these championships and he's buzzing, he's loving it. And like, and now they're just like, he's been losing for 1 year and already he's calling for like all of the cars to change. But Christian Horner was right. If you can't make your car right, it's your car ultimately. You know, it's not our fault that you can't build a good car anymore. So, you know, Toto was kind of, he didn't really have a point in my opinion. Like there is a safety point, yes, but you know, he was doing it for performance.
Yeah, that's
he was just doing it because he wanted a change.
Well, of course he did. Yeah, I mean, of course he's going to want a change that favours his team. That's, again, the job of the team principal. But you always, whenever you listen to any of these team principals, doesn't matter who it is, they're always going to be speaking in their best interest. And it's up to us to decide who we think is right, who we think's given a good compelling argument. Although I love it, it's like when he was like, oh, Checo's been saying about it, and he's like, I've printed it out,
show me
where's the ring binder.
I do also, I really do also love, like, especially Mattia, Toto and Christian, they basically, all three of them at different points, like gang up on each other when convenient. So like during the I think that porpoising episode, it was like,
it's like Mean Girls.
It was like it was like Mattia and Christian were like ganging up on Toto, and then during the cost gap saga, it was Toto and Mattia that were like talking about Christian, and Christian walks out and he's like, have you guys been talking about me? And Toto was like, yep.
Yeah.
Basically just shit talking about you, mate. So they gang up on each other when it's like convenient. I actually love it.
Yeah.
But I think that my favorite bit was the Piastri saga though. Like seeing Otmar, like seeing the little juicy bits of like when Otmar walked. You need to watch it, mate. It's actually the best.
Okay, I need to get involved.
5 and 6, those episodes.
Yeah, they're Otmar really walking into Zach Brown's office, basically saying like, listen, what's going on?
How did you boom arms just like
Netflix
stuck
boom
into like a vent so that you can pick up the audio?
It's
very echoey.
And the thing is, Zach, because obviously Zach needed to get rid of Ricardo because obviously he had 20 mil on the books, and he was basically trying to like, you know, let's do a swap. You know, Oscar wants to come to us, like we'll give you a Ricardo, you know.
That's wild.
And there was like an Alpine, like Daniel was chatting to, and from, you know, some people I've spoken to as well, like, it feels like the team at Alpine, the actual personnel would have welcomed Daniel back with open arms.
Yeah, that was amazing. Some people there was like a scene, Alpine personnel basically just said, we want to see you back, man. Like that was a cool scene,
which is really,
that's
nuts.
What I watch Drive to Survive for. I don't watch it for like the race coverage, because like I can see the race, I know, watched it. I watch for the bits that we never see, you know, actually
no one
Alpine,
would have ever known that
exactly, like, Alpine personnel like telling to Ricardo just straight up like, we want you back, man, we'd love to see you here. So
and I think that, because obviously there was certainly, and I understand it, I think there was a lot of, you know, with Ricardo losing his seat last year, I think there was a lot of, you know, people upset with McLaren that, you know, they pulled the rug out from under Daniel and all that. Mm-hmm. I get it, it kind of goes both ways because obviously Daniel wasn't performing on track and McLaren have to secure their future. And if they think a driver like, I think if there's, if a Piastri, a driver as an exciting a prospect as Piastri isn't available,
yeah,
then maybe they stick with Ricciardo because they had to pay out like a lot of money to Daniel to get shot of him early. But also it seems that, you know, Zach did want to manifest some kind of swap deal.
Because for him it would have worked, but they wouldn't have had to buy out Ricciardo's contract.
Yeah, I'm sure for Zach's conscience, because, you know, I don't think he's inhuman as much as, you know, it's brutal at the top of F1. I think he wanted to, you know, Daniel brought him his first win in Formula 1. Mm-hmm. And he's got a tattoo to remember it. Like, that will never go. And yeah, I do wonder, after that, I was thinking, what do you two think? Do you think they made the right decision going for Gasly over Ricciardo, Alpine?
What do you think, Niren? Gasly or Ricciardo at Alpine right now up against Ocon?
I would honestly, I would choose Ricciardo, you know.
Hmm.
I actually would.
Same.
But the thing is,
I feel like I would as well.
You know what it is? I would choose Ricciardo, but I would say Esteban. It's been nice knowing you.
Out the door, P45.
Gasly and Ricciardo.
So you get both in.
We're Red Bull linking it up, bro.
Oh, wow.
Vibe check.
Didn't see that coming.
Vibe check. That is a little bit harsh on Esteban. But in terms of like...
That is a bit harsh on Esteban, yeah.
Choose between Gasly and Ricciardo. No, I'd probably go with them.
Why, but why? What are your...
Because it worked. It worked under that. Yeah. It, like... If we look at Ricciardo, if we're taking Ricciardo's last 2 years, obviously, yes, they were like borderline disaster, to be honest.
Absolutely
with you,
howlers.
McLaren. Mm. But under that environment, when it was Renault, he slapped. Daniel Ricciardo at Renault was sick.
He was unreal.
They were best arguably the rest, his best like, years, I think. Because it's impressive what he did in Red Bull, but to take a midfield team like Renault and fight at the front,
yeah,
where you're more likely to get caught out in qualifying, you're more likely to get stuck in the midfield. To do what he did, I thought was
unfortunate. For those years get like forgotten because they were a little bit boring. Yeah. Like genuinely, those years of F1 were kind of like
I think
Mercedes
like,
are absolutely dominating. It
2019, was kind of like, 2020 gets forgotten. You're totally right. But what's really strange is that was amazing kind of years by him, and I feel like I would have gone with Ricciardo as well. But I will also say just kind of, to kind of defend Gasly. I don't think it's a lose-lose. I think it's a win-win, to be honest. Like, Gasly's he's still a youngish, kind of hungry driver. I don't think he's going to do a bad job or, like, you know, much worse than what Ricciardo could have done. But I think it was more about the mindset of Daniel. Like, is he really mentally all there and ready to go again, ready to be back in the midfield at the absolute pressure? Everyone's looking on him. What about if he failed again in 2023 at Alpine? His career like actually would have been over because we still have like those kind of like that silver lining or some of those good years that we remember of him at Red Bull. And, you know, we're going to kind of forget the, you know, in the grand scheme of his career, we're going to forget the McLaren years, I think. Mm. So there would have been a lot of pressure for him to deliver at Alpine if he did go there. And I'm not sure if like he would have been able to, you know, to handle it if it didn't go well.
Yeah, because my biggest, I've got kind of two caveats with Gasly because he's won a race. He's done bits in 2021. He was incredible. He was like best of the rest a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The two things with Gasly, the quality of teammates he's gone up against, it's Max by far and away the best and got destroyed by Max, as many people do.
Yeah.
And then it's been what, you know, Kvyat was okay, Tsunoda, you know, a rookie. Yeah. Like he hasn't had, you look at Esteban's teammates and he's had Fernando, he's had Checo.
Yeah.
You know, like two incredibly, and Daniel.
And Ricciardo.
He's had mad teammates already.
Yeah.
And Verlaine.
and Verlaine.
Give a shout out to Verlaine.
Verlaine was sick as well, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
That's why, I mean, I found this amazing. Last year was the first time in Ocon's career where he beat a teammate in the championship.
Yeah.
Wow. First time. But
true.
That doesn't tell you all the story. Like,
no.
Unreal teammates.
His teammates have been.
And he's always been competitive against them. Like, coming back in 2020 up against Ricciardo was a little bit rough, but he bounced back straight away and that's why he got the long-term contract off the back of how well he started 2021 against Fernando.
Him versus Perez was a dogfight as well.
But also...
Scrapping it out sometimes. It.
Look, yeah, literally, yeah.
Putting all the narrative of Gasly Ocon beef to one side, when you look at Ocon's relationship with teammates in terms of he will fight them all to will, but also Gasly, you know, he's an emotional driver. He's definitely been guilty of, you know, throwing his toys at the pram like a few times. We saw it, like his frustration bubble over AlphaTauri. And I think that combination, I do genuinely worry And it's not about any nonsense bollocks from the past. Like, it's about, you know, you look at Ricardo and Ocon, like they did, they worked as teammates, they worked together. And yes, if Ocon's closer to Ricardo, then maybe it would get a bit more feisty. But yeah, that's why I also would have gone. If I was in charge, I would have gone.
The point of having Ricardo there is, I don't think he's ever built a toxic relationship with any teammate. Like, even if he's getting slapped up by a teammate or he's absolutely pounding them, like he still is a nice guy.
Over
to have
a bit with Max, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
They kept their personal relationship quite well. I think it was a bit. It must have been a bit frosty.
It probably was a little bit now.
Yeah.
I think it was always great.
Like, even in 2018 when they crashed into each other, I don't remember it being like massively bad. You know,
well, it never boiled over like a, it was never like a Rosberg fucking.
You know what though, right? So
chucks his cap.
You remember Vettel Hamilton when Vettel drove into Hamilton in Baku?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, petulance. Seb was like, you know, fuming after Lewis was obviously fuming.
Use his car as a weapon. Arrest him now.
But they said afterwards, they were like, you know, that after that incident, they got closer. They became closer because then Seb went to Lewis, they talked it out, and they become better mates after that.
Yeah.
It's like this whole suck my balls thing with like Kevin and...
That people are still bringing up right now as if that's going to like
Kevin and Nico, they're like, they're fine about it. They joke about it.
That's probably what the group chat's called.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. It's
maybe we'll just call up my balls, do you reckon?
Yeah,
in that same chat.
Gunsteiner definitely allows that.
Oh, no, yeah, I mean,
he's a bit.
He set up the group.
Imagine that chat popping up on someone's phone that you're next to. You're like, whoa, what is going on there?
Nico Hulkenberg's wife sees that, goes, what the fuck? Wait, is going on?
Hold on a minute.
Hang on, I'm checking your photos, mate.
Boys, we've hit about an hour, so I think we should do the final section of the podcast.
Yeah.
Equal Machinery.
Indeed.
Got something slightly different from producer Lewis today. Big up.
Spicy.
Have you fallen off your chair? No, it's not fallen off his chair yet. Anyone who hasn't watched this section before, Niren, do you want to explain what we the format of this Equal Machinery section, please?
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is the segment where we are allocated, usually, a specific driver to argue that in Equal Machinery, they would come out on top. As we mentioned, our producer Lewis gives us each a driver and we go, boom, in the same car, this person would come out on top, whether we believe it or not, and then we guess at the end whether we really, truly meant it. Now, this week, we've actually got Equal Machinery from Machinery, because this is Most Improved Manufacturer for this season.
So we all have to argue of our allocation, which has been the most improved.
If we put a manufacturer in a car, no, that's not what we're going to do. we're not going to do that. We're going to decide out of the three that we've been allocated, which team is going to be most improved since last season. So Tomo, you've been given Alfa Romeo.
Alfa Romeo?
Yeah, it says just Alfa here as well, but that is actually, there's ambiguity.
There might be some ambiguity. There's a bit of blurry lines there. Which Alfa is it?
No, I'd rather Alfa Romeo.
No, it's Alfa Tauri. I think it's Alfa Tauri.
Slap Alfa Romeo. I've got Mercedes and you have got Aston Martin.
Oh, okay.
Most improved. I want to give it to you, Aldas, to start, because I just want to see you squirm.
When have you ever seen that?
You've got a minute to argue that Aston Martin will be the most improved manufacturer in 2023. Go.
Starts now.
I mean, first of all, the question basically answers itself. Aston Martin, they actually underperformed relative to the car that they had last year. I think they finished level on points with Alfa Romeo, but behind them in the championship, I think down in seventh place. So, of course, they're going to be the most improved team. They're already looking like they're going to be potentially best of the rest. So that's already two or three places up in the constructors from where they were last year. So, you know, are Mercedes going to be two or three places ahead or Alfa Romeo? I don't think so. So just through that fact alone, I think Aston Martin absolutely are going to be the most improved team. They've got Fernando Alonso fully motivated. They're already looking good. We were talking about the buzz of them potentially being quicker than Mercedes. So just the fact that those are kind of floating around, I think that makes them the most improved team, undoubtedly. And if they do, what car are they going to give Fernando Alonso? Is it going to be a podium capable car? Because if they do, then there might even be some race wins for that team as well. After the stinker that they had last season, that team is going to come out on top and be the most improved in 2023.
Oh shit, that was really fucking good.
He's finished with five seconds on
and
the...
Did you say you want to see me squirm? Are you joking me, babe? You're next now. You're next.
I lit a fire under him. Yeah, you know, what was the Toto... Actually, wearing the Toto turtleneck.
I'm wearing the toe-toe.
Did I have a target on my back?
I want all the smoke this year.
do you want to go next?
I'm good, bro.
Yeah, it's on you.
All right, it's on you, fam.
Okay, Alfa Romeo, 1 minute as to why they're going to be the most improved in 2023.
Shout out to that Grand Ujo.
Ignore the start of the last season, right? Yeah, they were great at the start, but you look at that car as the season went on and they scored fewer points than Williams in the second half of the season. They were ninth in the constructors if you're only taking the second half. So you look at Andreas Seidel coming in, you look at the Audi influence coming into that team, Ferrari engine improvements, fastest in the speed trap. Alfa Romeo, I think Joe's second season, Bottas consolidating on his position at that team. McLaren nowhere as well, falling down the order. Alpine, very unknown. Alfa Romeo P5 is not out of the realm of possibility in any way. And if you're going to look at Alfa Romeo, where they were actually performance-wise at the end of last season, they were nowhere. They were right at the back. They brought upgrades that didn't work. Hopefully now they've actually sorted it out. They've got a lot of turtlenecks at the team, and I think that will help them out, right? You need that efficiency. I could see them moving from ninth quickest car to fifth quickest car, four positions gained, which I think is more than what Aston Martin are going to improve, because they were comfortably the sixth quickest car by the end of last season. Done.
So his argument was like 90% turtlenecks.
No, that was one minor point. It was in a broader, fantastic argument.
There was a bit of turtleneck in it. That was actually pretty good. That was actually pretty decent as well, because Alfa Romeo were shocking at the end of last season.
This is most improved.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are you feeling confident?
No, I've worked it out. I've worked out the vibe check in my head.
Three.
I've worked out the vibes.
Two. One. Activate.
Now, you see, the problem with what you guys were doing is you were comparing from the end of last season. What you should be doing is comparing from testing last season, and Mercedes were absolutely shit at the start of last season in comparison to where they were the year before. Lads, I'm telling you, yes, they might have become good at the end of last season, but from testing last time out, Mercedes are a serious. They've got half a side pod now, lads. They've unlocked side pods. This is serious stuff. They're going to be winning races this season. They've stripped off paint off the car. Weight loss. I think they've even fixed a lot of the drag stuff as well from last season. Because realistically, let's be totally real, for straight line performance was a shambles last year. Even in Brazil, where the car was genuinely the quickest and where George Russell genuinely had a pace advantage over Max, he was completely unable to overtake just on pace alone. They fixed that for this season. That in itself is going to provide a championship winning car, in my opinion.
Straight line and vibes.
On the dot.
Straight line and vibes.
I think we all did pretty well there, actually.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
so there was a lot of waffling, but I think we waffled well.
But a minute. That's why we give it a minute. All right? That's all you need.
Yeah, I take offense to that. There was no waffle with me. It was just facts.
Bullet point.
Most improved. I think, I guess first we've got to define, right? If we're actually thinking about what we actually think, what are we using as the reference point from where the car is going to be first race of this year compared to last race of last year? Or are we saying what you said, which is a whole year ago?
That was fighting for my life.
Because my argument is surely we should look at the most recent times we saw the cars racing competitively, which was Abu Dhabi 2022.
Mm-hmm. I think it's what you do.
Where the car is now.
I think it's what you do over the course of the season. So how does your progression throughout 2022 compare to your progression throughout 2023? So for example, Aston Martin were absolutely dog shite at the beginning of 2022, and they got to a decent point. You know, they improved over the course of the season.
Them and Alfa Romeo were like polar opposite.
But even that did not kind of save them from finishing, I think, seventh in the end behind Alfa. So yeah, they progressed,
but not
well enough.
Yeah.
And so this year, I think they're going to be, you know, obviously I've made my point, but like this year, they're going to be, I think, they're going to progress even more throughout that. So they're going to start off better than where they were last year and finish even higher at the end of the season with Fernando at the team.
I think a really easy way to just decide is just sort of like, where will they finish constructors-wise in comparison, 2022 to 23. That's just like an easy sort of yardstick of like progression.
You have 23 races. You have 23 races to get everything done.
Because the constructors last year, you had kind of, it was Williams, you know, off on their own, and then you had Haas and AlphaTauri really close. You had Aston Martin and Alfa Romeo on the same number of points.
Yeah.
Alpine and McLaren together, Mercedes and Ferrari together, and then Red Bull on their own. So it's kind of, you had these pairs throughout the field.
Yeah.
And I think that for Alfa Romeo to, Like, they were seventh quickest, ninth in terms of points. But I think they were, yeah, for them to, they could maybe be the fifth fastest car. I see them maybe gaining two constructors' places at best.
But you're thinking about the first half of the season. It's not a given. It's not a given that Alfa Romeo are going to develop their car well throughout the season. They might start great luck.
No, but I'm comparing them to the total, because they finished 6th/7th. They had the exact same number of points as Aston Martin.
6th, not /7th.
It's the same number of points. Yeah, but just because Bottas got 84.
Even if he didn't join, it would still be 6th.
And also, if Stroll doesn't do his stupidity in Austin, then Aston Martin are well clear. If they don't fuck over Vettel with strategy in Abu Dhabi, they're well clear as well.
If one new show doesn't break down 7 times.
I'm just saying, if we're talking actual reality, not just numbers like F1 Twitter does, like you like to do, just numbers. If we're actually talking nuance of sport, then I think two relative positions gained. That's what I think for Alfa Romeo is like best case.
But do we think he believes that? Like, do we believe his argument? Is that?
Yeah, he's saying it quite passionately though. Yeah, I think he does kind of believe it. But it's also just like, I think in terms of just relative performance, I think Aston Martin probably have had more of an edge over testing so far than the gains that Alfa Romeo have made.
Okay. Well, I do think Aston Martin are going to be the most improved. Yeah. Then Alfa Romeo, then Mercedes.
Then Mercedes.
That's my kind of order.
Well, my vibes are Mercedes, obviously, because of the side pods and that. No team has actually unlocked an entire part of the car this season.
They obviously believe.
Have you not seen the swimming pool in Aston Martin, like, the way it slopes down? Yeah.
Like a ski slope.
Yeah, water slide. Exactly.
We're talking about, yeah, like Ferrari last year. We were all bathtub on the side, but that's that's a waterfall out of the side of that. But
you can sit in it.
But Mercedes were winning races by the end of the year. They were competitive, much more competitive, regular. But then in the fight for a few race wins as well, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Austin,
so it's like, you know, in terms of relative improvement, I don't think that's why I'd say third.
That's a tough gig though.
There's not as much to gain, I guess.
Yeah, there's not as much to gain. I think it's all relative, isn't it? Because like to me, it's harder to go from third to second in a constructor's
championship. Yeah, 100%.
To go from eighth to sixth.
Just like you get more credit, and just like there's more pressure, and you get more credit for, say, finishing second and third compared to, like, you know, going up two places in the midfield. You know, that's exactly for Mercedes. Say if they finish, even if they finish second, but only a few points behind Red Bull, that'd be it.
That means
they would have fought for the championship in some kind of capacity. So that would be a massive, massive improvement for them. And ultimately, then we could say, yeah, from where Mercedes were at the beginning of these rule, you know, changes, and even by the end of 2022, if they're fighting for Red Bull by the end of 2023, that's a huge, like, they are the most improved team over the course of the 2 years.
But I don't believe you think Mercedes will improve more relative than Aston Martin.
I don't believe them.
What's your order?
I think it can genuinely happen, but I genuinely think Aston Martin looks so good.
Hard to not get carried away.
But they could genuinely gain more than two positions. And I don't think even if Mercedes were fighting with Red Bull, I'd go, okay, that's cool. But yeah, Aston Martin went from like seventh to like fourth. That's crazy gains. So
what about me? Do you think I believe it?
Yes,
I do.
Yeah, of course you do.
It's because I'm surprised
you're
not.
Of course I do. Did you not hear that argument?
Fernando Alonso's jacket underneath your legs. You've got it with you.
It's actually in my helmet. Yeah, it's in the bag with my helmet. I was trying to keep it, you know, low key. I'm drinking the Alonso Aston Martin Kool-Aid, bro. I'm all over it. No. I do think that they have so much potential. Like the way they improved over the course of the season, and I'm never going to forget, at the end of 2022, there were some races, Austin in particular, they were best of the rest. Like at the end of lap one, Stroll was in third.
You're right, on the podium.
There were genuine races where they were the best of the rest.
Yeah, and that would have been like fifth and sixth, I want to say, for them that day.
Because I think Vettel did a last lap overtake on K-Mag, so he still did a madness. Stroll also did a madness, but in a different way. Almost taken out of him.
Again, second half of last year, they were comfortably clear of AlphaTauri, Haas. Williams, all that.
They were in the Alpine McLaren.
They were like 20 points off of like, but again, if there's a few instances where on pace, they were comparable. And again, that's the thing. If you compare Aston Martin at the start of last season to the start of this season versus the end of last season to the start of this season, that's completely different because that car changed. Even though the car changed so much over the course of last year with the whole side pods changing, they still end up changing 95% of the car going into this year relative to the end of last season as well.
Yeah.
And it's not a given. The thing is, obviously, all of this, we haven't even had the first race. You know, it's not a given that Aston Martin are going to do as well as we think they are.
No,
but
it's done.
It's done. Oh, okay.
Is it track suited as well? You know, we're only tested at Bahrain.
We're going to see you
test the different tracks
for the final race of this
year. Merchants, yeah.
Final race of this year when Alonso's going for the title. Joint on points with Verstappen and Hamilton, and you're going to be in a full Aston Martin tracksuit. Yeah.
Stroll's still like 11th in the championship.
I'll be it. Get me on that episode. Get me on that. I'm going to be on that watch along for the title decider. Lewis and George and Fernando and Max all for the title.
The title decider, we are getting extra seats.
Oh my God.
We are having 7 people on the show.
We'll get tiers.
We'll get
seating up.
We'll have
there.
A live audience over there as well. That has to, because that if actually, that's the title,
we're going
to
do that.
If there's a title decider of any kind, we should get like bare people on like live audience.
100%.
Definitely. 1,000. Yeah.
Well, hopefully. Well, there you go. That's the pre-season hype. And next time you'll see us will be for the Barrett.
Oh, we got a live show.
Fucking finally.
Yes.
3 months.
Come on.
Not been drinking good, but at least you've had World Cup and football stuff.
The Bevs, mate.
But if there's no F1, you just do football.
Yeah.
And then when there is one, you still do football.
Yeah.
So it's like you're always eating good, man. We've been struggling.
I know. Yeah, I'm sorry, lads. Starving out here, bro. So I'm ready for Bahrain.
I'm bringing the drinks. I'm bringing the Bevs.
When do you not bring the Bevs, though? You know what I mean?
Sorry, I've got
dark fruits. Dark fruits straight into your veins. Thank you everyone for listening and watching. And in the comments below, if you're watching on YouTube, let us know what you think. Do you think that out of those three teams, Merck, Aston, Alpha, you know, who's going to have the most relative gain? Have you drunk the Aston Martin Kool-Aid? Because the belief is strong.
Relative to expectations as well. Who's going to improve most relative to like expectations?
The belief is strong, but then if it doesn't pan out, it hurts all that much more when you
imagine
believe.
All this Aston finished 10th. No points.
Imagine. Kind of would be funny. But
where can
everyone listen?
Yeah, well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're part of the audio-only crew, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating on Spotify. If you are watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. You guys know the score by now. Slap on notifications because it'll tell you when that live show starts for Bahrain. But you can also listen in. Give us a 5-star rating on your Nokia 3310. you can listen in there.
YouGov.org.
Yeah, YouGov.org. When you're slapping in your taxes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're on the little sidebar down at the bottom.
That's it.
Until next time, peace and love.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.